Welcome everyone to All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 117, recording this on the 11th November 2014. I'm Steve Litchfield. With me, I have Rafe Blandford.
Hello everybody.
And we have news of an exciting device I got my hands on this week. Rafe, it's yellow. It's a rival to the Lumia 1020, and you may have seen my write-up on the site.
I'm just trying to think what this device could possibly be. I suspect it's one of these clone devices.
Yes, I was trolling the entire site user base and hoping you wouldn't tell me off about it. But I was in a family home and somebody said, oh, I've just got picked this up down the market, essentially. And it looked like a Lumia 1020. I couldn't believe it. They said they bought it for £7. And it turns out it's a complete clone of the 1020, right down to a Windows Phone skin. But it's really slow, really underpowered. And it runs Android 4.1. And I just thought it was worth a few photos.
It was seven quid from the market. That's pretty amazing.
So anyway, you can get them if you really, really look hard on eBay, but I wouldn't recommend it. It is a complete pile of rubbish, as you might expect at that price. And it just shows the amount of clones out there running Android. And I just one point, Rafe, you're a Mr. Analyst here, but we hear stats like Android has, 80% of the world's smartphone market share. How much of that 80% are devices like these, which technically run Android, technically log into Google services, technically log into the Play Store and download apps, but are complete and utter trash?
Well, I think it's difficult to put a number on those because, of course, these companies don't tend to report shipments and there isn't any easy way to distinguish them from other devices unless you're getting right into the logs. But I suspect actually the sort of really cheap Android devices, which are typically imported from China and they're built using off-the-shelf components, are probably more substantial than a lot of people realize. Of course, when it actually comes down to it, they aren't used for very much, mainly because the experience is so poor. But one of the increasing things that people have been talking about in the Android world, at least, particularly with regard to the China market, is there's a lot of devices that are running Android open source project as opposed to kind of Android with Google bits. And in effect, they're almost operating as two separate platforms, especially as Google is putting more bits of its software sort of into its own applications. And there are things like Google Play services, and the stuff that you get with Google component is an ever more substantial part of the platform. I wouldn't quite so go as far as to say they're different platforms, but certainly there's a very significant fragmentation between the two in terms of things like version. I mean, it's much like you get the different version of Android on the Kindle Fire devices. And some of these cheap clone devices will run Android open source projects. Some will try and run with Google version. They actually tend to be the slightly more expensive ones. This is the one we refer to in the story here is probably a hack around that actually is running some Google apps but isn't officially with Google, because that requires a certain amount of certification and testing and costs. But yes, you're absolutely right to identify this. It is at least a significant portion of Android devices. It varies from market to market, most significant in places like China and to a lesser extent India. Here in the UK, the vast majority of the devices, and you're right, it's depending on the figures you look at, it's between 70 and 75% market share in the UK. It's probably near the 70% at the moment, with Windows Phone on about 10% and iOS somewhere under 20%. All of those in the UK at least tend to be official Google devices, but of course there are some people importing them, and there are, as you found out, some that you can go and buy down the local market. And I suspect we will see more of those. I mean, it's kind of inevitable as the commoditization of hardware happens to a greater and greater extent.
Yeah, absolutely. More seriously on the device front, we have the launch of the Lumia 535, of which more in a moment, but just as a tease there, a few other brief news stories I wanted to mention and features. First of all, I did an interview, Rafe, with Damien Dinning, ex-head of imaging at Nokia, who now works at Jaguar. And I guess after a year or so away from Nokia, he felt free enough to speak to a certain degree. And did you have a chance to listen to the sort of hour-long podcast?
I haven't had a chance to go all the way through it. I just had a little taster, but you did hear about some of the kind of the stories from the past. But I was wondering if you would like to pick out a few particular highlights, or sort of, even if it's anecdotal stuff, because I mean, after all, Damien Dinning, with admittedly a very big team, I think it's probably fair to say Damon was always very self-effacing about the fact that he was just the person who happened to be the public spokesperson. There was a big team. Nonetheless, you know, he was one of the team behind devices like N73, the N90, kind of the first of the really great camera phone devices, the N93, and of course the N95, the N82, the N86, all of those specialist camera devices, right up to the 808 PureView, and of course the Lumia 1020, which we referred to a moment ago. And it was both in the hardware side and on the software side. So I guess my question to you, Steve, would be, were there any particular highlights that stood out from your hour-long chat with him?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that just you mentioned quite a few devices there. It's the sheer amount of devices he was involved in the imaging for. He was going right back to things like the 6680. And this has been a Windows Phone podcast. We really shouldn't dwell on these old ancient Symbian devices. But it was the number of devices he was involved in the imaging on runs, I think, into the 20s, which is pretty darn impressive. And of course, ending up with the Lumia 1020, which he actually still has that as his main device. And our two 1020s were on the table together, and we had a good old,
how sweet.
Good old 41 megapixel fest. The other thing I'd say is that it's still noticeable that even a year after leaving Nokia, there's all sorts of things he felt he couldn't talk about. I don't think he was necessarily under any kind of legal non-disclosure agreement after all this time. And some of these projects and code names he was plucking out and saying, well, I shouldn't really mention that code name. These were devices from 11 or 12 years ago. So it's quite impressive, really, that the amount he's got inside his head. And we tried to get as much out as possible in the podcast, but didn't quite manage to grill him too much.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that people don't really appreciate about the devices that make it to the public. There are quite a few that never get released. They only exist in the prototype or the planning stage. I've seen over the years various bits of documentation that talk about products that never made it, and particularly in the N series, well, there's a couple of devices that stand out in the mind that had the kind of a form factor a bit like the E61, but instead of having a QWERTY keyboard, just had a kind of 12-key keyboard and then multimedia controls. And there were various sort of, I think the code names were pager around that form factor, and then some fairly funky things with screens at different angles to the keyboard. And while it's difficult to pull out all of those because they never get officially announced. There's certainly roadmaps floating around where you can see devices that never saw the light of day, at least in public. And I'm sure the same is true of the imaging side. Of course, on the imaging side, what's perhaps not so obvious when you look at the devices is they do tend to go in families. And so the camera modules do get reused. I mean, that's become more obvious recently with things like the 1520 and the 930, for example. But that's always kind of been the case. I mean, the 6680 was another one of those, and the N95 module got reused in a number of devices. It used to be more obvious in the mid-tier, and things like the EDOF camera on the E51, the E52, and a couple of other devices. But I'm planning on having a long listen to that, and I'm sure there'll be lots of questions coming at it. So we might revisit that in a future podcast.
Yes, he was mentioning that quite a few of the things we've taken for granted in the Windows Phone world, kind of not core imaging things like refocus and cinemagraph, were essentially his idea. And he was saying that he had several other ideas which he passed on to the team, Juhar and the guys, of which some are now coming to fruition, and things like dynamic flash and rich capture. Yeah. And he's got other ideas which still haven't been announced yet. So there's quite a lot in the pipeline, it seems. And as we're seeing today with the launch of the 535, which we'll come to in a moment, there are still some serious engineering minds there at now working for Microsoft, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing you have to think about for something like imaging, especially on the hardware side, it's going to take 3 or 4 years and even longer in some cases. I mean, the 808 and the 1020 are kind of a case in point with the oversampling. You know, that has a history going back 5 years. And so the genesis of an idea may take a long time to come to the market. I mean, it is true of other hardware errors. And sometimes the software isn't quite capable yet, or it hasn't got to a level that's suitable for public release. And so I have absolutely no doubt at all that some of the early concepts that Damon would have worked on will emerge in the next few years. And absolutely, there's still a very strong imaging team. I mean, they've since had other departures to Apple and a couple of other companies as well. But there's still, you know, a trio of people at the top of that imaging team. And actually, there's more than that. I mean, it doesn't always get acknowledged. There's actually quite a large imaging team split between, I think it's now Tampere and Lund in Sweden. But I know there are specialists in various parts of the world as well. And, you know, they're still very much active in developing things. And if anything from that interview, I think, comes out is just how long Nokia, and obviously it's now been inherited by Microsoft, have been working on imaging and that kind of expertise. I think it's fair to say it breeds its own success in the sense that you establish an expertise and it then becomes a production line of new things. And that's the sort of thing that's very hard to replicate for other companies. You can't just come in and copy it. And Nokia, now Microsoft, has a particular way of looking at things, which I think is a little different to some of the other companies. We've seen HTC, for example, take a slightly different approach with imaging. We're seeing, you know, Samsung and Apple work very hard on imaging. And Apple, I think, has had kind of a different set of ethos. It's been more around the performance and social camera. And I think arguably, in some ways, was the more mass market approach and perhaps the sensible thing to do when you've just got a single device, or at least a couple of devices now in the case of the iPhone. But Nokia, and I guess we should call it Microsoft Imaging's approach now, has been far more holistic for a long time, in the sense that it's always looked to take a wider viewpoint, and that's resulted in some really great ideas. But does it perhaps be lacking in focus sometimes? Perhaps. But nonetheless, I think you point to all of the camera phone imaging innovations, and the vast majority of them have come out of, you know, that team in the last decade, and that's a truly impressive achievement.
Yeah. So do go and listen to that interview with Damon Dinning if you haven't already, people listening to this. Sorry for breaking up the run of Steve and Rafe specials. We have a Steve and Damien special, and it's just published in the normal podcast feed, which I felt was the right thing to do just to make sure people had a chance to listen to it. If you're not particularly interested in smartphone imaging, then maybe just give it a miss and switch to the one you're listening to now, which I guess is self-referential. So let's move on. I did put up a small feature, Rafe, which has already been stamped on by people saying they want more. I'm trying to pick a winner of the current Twitter clients for Windows Phone. Now, the complication is that the stuff we used to use, Rowy, I think it was, and Mado, they've either reached their Twitter token limit. Twitter limits all clients to 100,000 users or less, or have been withdrawn by the developers for other reasons. So the two perhaps I would have gone to first have both been withdrawn from the Windows Phone store. Twabit was actually withdrawn, as I recall, and I wasn't available when I started writing the feature, and then became available again. So I'll have to include that in the next version of the feature. But I was looking at Peregrine, MeTweets, and of course the first party Twitter client, trying to pick a winner. They each have their pros and cons, but I came down on the side of Peregrine, which, much to my great surprise, was the only one capable of updating its timelines in the background, i.e. using a proper Windows Phone background agent, such that when you switch back to the client, for example, using the multitasking carousel, a double tap on the any of the top of the timelines, mentions or messages, and you're immediately up to date to within the refresh rate of the background agent, which is about 20 minutes. Whereas the other clients, Twitter and MeTweets, you basically had to drag down and wait for a refresh, which was a tiny bit tiresome. So my vote went to Peregrine, despite it being perhaps the most bare-boned of three. So what about you? What did you think of the feature, and what's your favorite Twitter client on Windows Phone?
I have to admit that I've switched back to using the official Twitter client, having gone through various third-party options. I did like Rowy very much. That was kind of my go-to client. But having switched through various devices, that's kind of gone in one of the shuffles. I suspect I've still got it and sort of working on an older device. But I am tempted now to go and try Peregrine, just as you say, for that kind of streaming support and the ability to kind of have something happening in the background. Of course, there's a battery and a resource hit on that. But to be honest, the big difference for me in terms of Twitter usage has been on Windows Phone 8.1 and having the notifications integrated into kind of the drop-down pull from the top of the screen, which means I'm actually aware of new tweets coming in terms of mentions and things I've set up notifications for. And that, to me, was a bigger change in my Twitter usage on Windows Phone. And it tends to be, I honestly use Twitter more as a distraction when I've sort of just got a few seconds and want to read through a bit of content. I tend not to sort of be always on it. That it changes depending on what I'm doing, but it's interesting to see so many comments. It's obviously a hot topic in the Windows Phone world, which Twitter client you go to. And it's interesting to see that a lot of people are using the default client, but it's a surprising number also having a view on which third-party one is good. And yes, you know, a few comments on the background processing on Windows Phone as well. And as always, people coming up with other suggestions that you've not deliberately missed in the Twitter roundup. It's just there are so many apps, it's sometimes hard to keep track of what's available. But I guess that's a long-winded way of saying I'm just using the basic, boring, classic official Twitter app, which I've kind of been forced onto on pretty much all the platforms I'm on, partly because it's consistent across those platforms and partly because, of course, Twitter hasn't exactly been embracing of third-party clients in general.
Yeah. One of the clients that was suggested in the comments was Tweetium, which is actually still in closed beta, but you can get access to it if you know the link. And I have got it installed and it works really, really well. It too has issues with background updating, though, so I'll be keeping my eye on that. And as soon as it becomes publicly available, I'll be doing a version 2 of the feature, basically taking the existing table, adding to it, adding extra clients, adding extra comment. And so do look out for that probably in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, if that comes out of beta. And I will add Twabbit at the same time, which means it'll be a 5-way shootout. And you can tell where this is going, Rafe, because I started in this way with my Podcatcher roundup. And that was the last count. Was it 15 or 16 clients and completely unmanageable? I actually had to split it across two features of 4,000 words each. So I'm just hoping this doesn't grow to quite the same Leviathan.
It's probably worth mentioning, as you've just mentioned, the podcast, that I think it's Podcast Lounge has been updated with some new features. I know you've been using that, so maybe just share what's in that update.
There were two big things for me. Well, one I should just mention because it was a favour to the developer, because he just signed on board, as it were, with this thing called Podlove, which is a new, completely new technology. The idea is to link up buttons on web pages with specific subscriptions in clients. So if enough web pages, which host podcasts, support it, if enough podcatchers on most, as many platforms as possible support it, in theory, that Mr. and Mrs. Normal could just click on a button on a web page and be subscribed in their favorite podcatcher to that feed. So that's the aim. It's worth having a look at. We've put links to Podlove in the story, and Podcast Lounge is the first podcatcher that I know of that supports that. So well done to both developers. Second thing is that something I've been asking Richard Castle, the developer of Podcast Lounge, for a while, is that when you do the auto-generated playlists, for example, what's new yesterday and today or what's new in the last week, it tries to get the very latest information and goes online to get them. And I'm saying, look, it's the background agent in Podcast Lounge is already doing the refreshing of the RSS feeds while it's charging overnight, etc. Just provide an option to generate these playlists really quickly from the RSS feeds and the podcast feed you've already got. That should be much, much faster. And I think he's now put a load of optimization along those lines in. And so I've only been testing it for one day because that's how long the update's been out. But the aim is that you can go into those smart playlists and have them generate within a second or two, which would be a great improvement. But enough teasing on with the main event, which I guess is the launch of a brand new device. It doesn't often happen in the Windows Phone world in 2014. The last ones were the 830 and the 735, of course. The 535, this is a difficult one, Rafe, to pitch it in terms of where it fits in. Now, the 530 was obviously a small budget phone. This is a large budget phone. And in some ways, it almost steps on the 735's territory. It certainly supersedes things like the 625 by having a larger screen and yet similar or better performance, certainly a better front-facing camera. I mean, we'll go through the specifications in a moment, but essentially it's a 5-inch screen device, Snapdragon 200, that I think will surprise most people who see it on shop shelves, because they will look at it with the 5-inch screen and they will see the price, which will be something in the region of £130, £140 on SIM free, maybe £99 on pay as you go and £15 a month on contract. And then right next to it on the shelf will be the 5-inch Galaxy S5 and the Moto X, devices like that, which are 3 or 4 times the price. And they'll say, hang on a minute, why is this 3 or 4 times cheaper? And I think they'll be pleasantly surprised if they actually manage to get a demo and see how fast and fluid Windows Phone is on the 535.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, as you said, it's got a bigger screen than the 625. And just as we talked about the kind of various other phones being updates for things maybe outside their obvious class number, I do think this looks to me like an update to the 625 into the kind of the Windows Phone 8.1 family devices, you know, the Snapdragon 200 initially rather than a 400. But in terms of both the design, what it's got in it, I think it's really interesting. But it's also a significant improvement over the 530 in some ways, if you look at the internals, which we'll maybe go through in a minute. It's also kind of following the design language of the most recent set of devices, you know, orange and green, and then black in terms of color options. It's not going to be of immediate interest maybe to people listening to this podcast, but it is really important to have a really great low-end value device in terms of everything it's got. And I we'll talk about the specification in a minute, just trying to talk about the positioning. But as you said there, it is kind of the first Lumia device ever to not have the Nokia branding on it. It has Microsoft written along the top of the device and then Microsoft plus the Microsoft logo on the back of the device. So that's what we kind of alluded to at the beginning of this podcast. It's significant as piece of history in a way. And I guess there's a tear in the corner of my eye to say goodbye to the Nokia branding. It's going to be a bit confusing while both sets of device on the market, because we're going to have some Nokia branded Lumia devices and some Microsoft Lumia brand devices. But I guess it's going to take a few years or so for that to go away once all the current devices are kind of sorted out. And it will be Microsoft Lumia from now on, kind of a page in history. It's also interesting to see Microsoft talking about this as a 5x5x5 smartphone package. That's a reference to the 5-inch screen. And that is, as I said, bigger than the 625, which had a 4.7-inch screen, I think. But it is actually the same as something like the 830 or the 730, 735. The other 5 is a 5-megapixel camera, and it's also got a 5-megapixel rear-facing camera. And then it's also got the kind of 5 Microsoft services that get talked about. And it thinks, I can't remember the exact 5 it's referring to, but it things like Skype, OneNote, Xbox, and Office. I mean, it feels a slightly forced 5x5x5, but fine if that's how you want to talk about it in marketing speak. Interesting that it's a 3G device, and there is going to be a dual SIM option as well, and it's running Lumia Denim and Windows Phone 8.1, so right up to date in that sense. And so to me, it actually feels like a really nice complement to the 730 and the 830. And if anything, it leaves the 530 and the 630 just looking maybe a bit aged. And the 630 may be slightly different because it's a slightly different offering. And the 530, again, it's that slightly smaller size, but really nice entry into the low end. And as you said, you know, put this on the shop shelf against other devices, especially as it's been slimmed down a bit. It's a bit like the 625 in that it's actually slimmer than you might expect for a low-end device. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, maybe we should go through the specs a little bit and just actually make some comparisons directly to the 535, because it is slightly more expensive in terms of the announcement pricing. I think there's something like $10 or 10 euros in it, which admittedly is quite a bit when we're talking about a device that's only at the 115 euro point or so. You know, it's maybe 5 to 10% of the cost, but I actually think what they put in it makes that well worthwhile, the extra $5 or $10. Sometimes you wonder about it, this type of device, but do you want to kick things off, Steve?
Yeah, but before we go into the specs, just to mention that you forgot to mention there's now a cyan version by popular demand. They brought cyan back.
That's right.
Will please a lot of people, but this obviously is running Lumia Denim, and it's a... You can kind of think of it as an upgraded 530 or a cheaper sister to the 830, if you like, in different materials. 9mm thin, as you said, a Snapdragon 200, 1GB of RAM. It's kind of the baseline 2014 Windows Phone architecture and set of specifications that they know works well, as opposed to the ultra budget with half a gigabyte of RAM, which they know will struggle with some games. Here you've got enough RAM to run all the applications, all the games. 1.2 gigahertz doesn't say much from the Android world, but in Windows Phone, it's absolutely fine. The 5-inch screen is important because, as I said earlier, it means that it is competitive with the other phones that people might be aspiring to elsewhere on the shop shelves. 540 by 960, that's QHD, that's lowercase QHD, I should emphasize. It doesn't sound like very much. I think the PPI works out at something like 230, 240. But let's be honest, away from the geek bleeding edge, I think QHD, even at that size, is absolutely fine for Mr. and Mrs. Normob in the high street.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, the other thing is there's sort of the screen appears to be of higher quality until we get our hands on one. We can't be absolutely sure about this. But I mean, for example, it does have the sunlight readability enhancement. It's protected by Corning Gorilla Glass 3 as opposed to kind of the plastics or the sort of lower quality glass. I think it was in the 530. I'd have to check that out. And it does have things like the high brightness mode as well. That's actually also reflected in some of the sensors that are in the device. So it has an ambient light sensor. So compared to the 530, for example, it's going to be able to do auto brightness adjustment on the screen. And the 530 screen, to me, really was disappointing. I mean, probably not surprising in a device at that cost level. But the 535 is the screen, I think, is probably the most significant upgrade when you're first looking at the device. And there's also some other sensors in there that, in terms of proximity sensors and things like that. The camera is actually better because it's autofocus rather than fixed focus. It's obviously got a front-facing camera, which the 530 didn't have. And I think also significant in memory terms is the internal storage. It's up to 8 gigabytes rather than the 4 gigabytes on the 530. And that just means, I would say, it's usable without having to buy a micro SD card. I mean, you are going to be a bit limited in what you can do. The battery capacity is bigger. It's up from 1430 to 1905, I think, on the 535. So there's actually upgrades right across the board that certainly reflect good value for money, given that this is coming out 6 months later, really, than the 530. You're actually getting a lot of extra value in this device for not a lot of extra money. I mean, I suppose it speaks towards how component costs and things like that come down. But I would also say just the styling of it in terms of the size, you know, we've mentioned the thickness, 8.8 millimeters. That compares to 11.7 millimeters on the 530. So you can see it's not quite a quarter, but it's getting that way. It is significantly heavier, mainly because it's got the bigger battery in it, and it's obviously a bigger device overall. But I really like the improvements made here. And I think we were quite critical of the 530 for probably cutting too much. And we were perhaps went too far with that, given that it was a low-cost device. But then you look at this 535, there's very, very little you can pick out to complain about for a budget device. In fact, I think it corrects a lot of the things that were wrong, in inverted commas, with the 530. And I kind of have to admit, I would like to see an updated 530, maintaining the 4-inch screen size that you get on the 530, but with the other hardware improvements in it. We may see that in due course, but 535 is probably calling towards that trend for large screens. I mean, 5 inches does seem to be coming the kind of accepted standard these days on smartphones, be it low-end or high-end.
Yeah, I did mention in my headline, in fact, that I think this hits the low-end sweet spot. I think they've got the specifications exactly right. Yes, that part of me thinks, well, maybe they could have squeezed LTE in there, but then the LTE chipsets, they do obviously cost money at this stage in 2014. There's no clear black display, but then again, you've got the sunlight readability, you've got the high brightness mode. Maybe they'll compensate for the lack of CBD. And again, look at the price point. The fact they've got the same front camera as the 735, which was, you know, that the 735 was all about, if you read Nokia's marketing or Microsoft's marketing, was all about the selfie camera, and he's got the same front camera, so in theory you can get the same results, and, you know, Lumia selfie, that application would produce just as good results and will attract people. The rear camera is slightly smaller than the 735, but we know that Nokia make good cameras even at one over 4-inch optical format, a 5 megapixel. That's going to be a pretty decent camera. Video, is it full wide VGA rather than 720p? But then the screen is not 720p either, so you're not necessarily going to notice any kind of degradation. You're going to view videos on the screen, and it will almost be up to screen resolution. So I think they really have hit a sweet spot. I agree.
Yeah, and I mean, that video is really about the Snapdragon 200 processor that's in there. You know, a lot of the time you won't notice it on Windows Phone, or rather it will be relatively small difference between that and a 400 or an 800 video, because it's such an intensive process to encode or decode video, you know, that does have an impact. So it's interesting that, you know, that's kind of a visible thing there. Having used some of the Snapdragon 200 devices, including the 530, it surprises me that there's not a bigger difference, particularly when you kind of reference the Android world, whereas you kind of hinted at early 1.2 gigahertz, even on a quad-core device like the Snapdragon 200 would not appear to be enough. That's the advantage that Windows Phone has in this space. And we do have to come back to the pricing. 110 euros before local tax, as I say, that is a little more expensive than the 530, if my memory is serving me correctly. But, you know, that means it's effectively going to be, well, I mean, even with a direct translation, it's going to be about £110, including taxes. So with that, by the time it arrives, which I mean, think means on pay as you go, we can expect this to hit the market at maybe even the sort of £70 or £60 price point, given that the 530 itself came in at £49.95 in some places. Now, that's specific to the UK. Even elsewhere, it's going to be around that €100, $100 magic price point. Of course, you'll be able to get cheaper phones, and it wouldn't surprise me entirely if sooner or later we see a Lumia 330 or 335 that is really rock bottom. But for most people, this is going to be a really great entry-level Windows phone device. And I find myself getting much more enthusiastic about this than I did about the 530, which just felt like it cut a little bit too much. But it also sort of tells me how the smartphone market moves so quickly that, you know, you have a model that was announced earlier this year in the form of the 530, which really does feel out of date, and it's been left out of date by kind of moving component prices and things like that. You know, it's not just that Microsoft is offering a better value device. They're able to do that because presumably the cost of putting these extras in, you know, 4 gigabytes of internal memory, an extra bit of RAM, a better screen, that's definitely more than the extra price point that this is charging. So it kind of just reminds me how fast the smartphone market's moving, particularly for the lower end and mid-tier devices. Actually having devices or your family devices updated once a year, which has kind of been the traditional thing, isn't going to be enough anymore. And so quite how the numbering works, I don't know, but it sort of tells me at the lower end of this market, you'll need to do the 530 at the first half of the year, the 535 at the second half of the year, and then this time, you know, in 6 months' time, it'll have to be the 540. They'll probably skip 40 for various reasons. It'll be the 550. And then 6 months after that, it'll have to be the 555. Whereas at the top end of the market, you can probably afford to go a little bit longer. And so, you know, they have the 930 now, and next summer, I expect the 940 or the 950 to be announced. But it just makes me think, actually, we might see more activity, ironically, in the mid-tier and the low end. I mean, I know people are desperate to see another high-end Windows phone device, and I'm sure there'll be something in the Lumia lineup before too long. And while the 730 and the 830 are great now, they've maybe got a little bit longer. I wonder if we won't see something akin to the a 635, or by then it might be a 640 or 650, you know, at MWC or something like that, to kind of reposition everything. Because suddenly you look at this 535 and you go, really the next device that I would consider a proper upgrade is the 735. And even then, that's a little bit questionable. I mean, the 830 is really the one that's a significant step up. And that's, you know, that's obviously a big cost leap. But really, really quite impressive. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on this. It's probably worth pointing out that, as you would expect for a device like this, it's going to be aimed at kind of key markets first. It's going to go into China, Hong Kong, and Bangladesh in the next few weeks. It won't arrive in the UK and other Western European markets until quarter one next year. That probably means January or February. I think the attention on all of the Western markets, and they'll be pushing the 735, the 830, and the 930, with the 530 kind of being the stocking filler option. And presume there's maybe production run issues that make sense to push, you know, this 535 into other markets. But really, if you're looking for an entry level Windows phone, look no further. And it just makes the job of all those other non-Microsoft manufacturers, of which things like the YesBilly, the Kaboom, and Arcos, and 10 or so others, have now got an even harder job making a device, you know, stand out from the crowd. Because the 535 is very impressive indeed for, you know, for its combination of price and features.
Yeah, you can see why Sony in the Android world was astonishing people by coming out with a new device, a new flagship every 6 months. And that really is the pace of the mobile industry, that you almost have to be on a 6-monthly cycle just to keep abreast with what you want
Absolutely.
To do. Yeah. Go on.
I was going to say, it just makes me wonder whether we'll ever get to the point where effectively you have the internals of a model upgraded halfway through its life cycle rather than changing the name. I mean, it's kind of interesting that HTC have almost done this sort of thing, where they've had announced a model and then they announce various variants, sometimes with a small change in the name or a one number difference, in order to address different markets. And Lumia's almost done the same thing with something like the 730 and the 735, in terms of having dual SIM or single SIM versions and 4G or 3G versions. Obviously, it's not the case here with the 535, but it does feel like we've got a whole bunch of models that in some ways could all share the same name and then just have a variant name after them. That really comes down to naming scheme and what works well. I mean, actually, I think the 535, for once, is the logical name, and it seems to fit in the right place, because it is sort of saying this is the low end, but it's, you know, an upgrade on the 530, which is pretty much exactly right. But there is that screen thing again, which is you know, for people who have been used to a 4-inch screen and were looking at the 530 because of that, they're going to look at the 535 and go, oh no, it's another one in the mold of the 625 versus 620.
Yeah, it's interesting that with the screen, smartphone screen aspect ratio is going to 16 by 9 a few years ago. That really enabled larger screen sizes without devices being coming too unmanageable. Back in the day, you know, we had quarter VGA, everything was 4 by 3. And of course, if you scale that up, the smartphone, the width of the smartphone becomes completely untenable, whereas these devices with a 5-inch screen diagonally, look at the 830 in my hand now, and it really is very, very handleable, and I haven't got large hands, so you can absolutely, I think this is a sweet spot. But do go and look at the news story if you're listening to this, and it contains the specifications and some more quotes, comments, also some promo videos from Microsoft. Just on that subject of the name, Rafe, perhaps we can finish with a bit of discussion on, if you imagine that the shop shelves, Samsung, Apple, Sony and so forth, and then Microsoft. What do you think the man in the street, I mean, I know we're based in the UK, we can only look at it from a UK perspective, but what will the UK man in the street think when he looks on the shelves? Will he see the tiles, the live tiles, the Windows Phone interface and think, oh yes, that's Windows Phone. I've been eyeing that up for a while. I'll go for that. Do you think he's even going to notice the fact that Nokia has now been displaced by Microsoft, and will it make a difference?
I want to say yes, of course he will, because I'm noticing and I'm sort of shedding a tear. But when you talk to a few people, they go, oh, that's the Microsoft device, or that's the Nokia device, or that's the Lumia device. So I think some of those have become interchangeable. I haven't seen any particular surveys about this, but I'm pretty sure there's a reason in the last year or so we've seen more mention of Lumia in the kind of the branding and in the marketing campaigns than anything else. And actually, most recently, we've seen Microsoft come in a lot more in the idea of Windows. And so that's sort of naturally been seeded. I think it's tempting for people who are in the mobile world, and particularly those who listen to this podcast, who might have traditionally been identified themselves as Nokia fans, or at least a Nokia loyalist, to sort of go, of course I'm going to notice. Everyone's going to be horrified by this. I don't think the Nokia name was quite what it once was. And I think over and beyond that, you know, the Microsoft name is still pretty strong. And those that really care about this stuff is actually going to know that the Microsoft device is the Nokia device, and it's being made by the same people. Sort of the broader question is, you know, how will Microsoft as a mobile phone manufacturer brand stand up against some of the others? You know, because Microsoft is very well known, but that can be, I think, both a blessing and a curse. Those of a certain generation will remember all the monopoly battles and Microsoft as kind of the evil empire and replacing the middle S of the name with a dollar sign. And there's a certain amount of toxicity to that brand. I think I've described it that way before. I think you could probably say the same thing about each of the brands. You know, some people won't like Samsung or Motorola. You know, certain people will associate Motorola with, you know, the sort of annoying flip phones or the not very cool branding, but actually it's probably a bit unfair, particularly when you look at something like the Motorola G and the E, which are actually very, very good mid-tier devices. And of course, Apple has a lot of brand cachet. Then you look at something like Sony, you know, and you can draw any length of time, you go back and that's got, you know, stood for high quality, you know, professional Japanese engineering, and I think they probably tried to reinforce that, but there was a period where it wasn't a particularly brilliant phone brand, when it maybe lost its way a little bit, and going through the whole Sony Ericsson era, though some of those devices were actually fantastic. Fond memories of the T68i and the P800 and devices like that. So honestly, it's difficult for me to say, because I'm so deeply enmeshed and have my own views on it, that trying to step back and say, what will the man on the street think? I don't know. But I have noticed a lot of people showing more interest in Windows Phone device, and I think the tiles and the colours have become quite heavily associated with it, and actually the Nokia name has kind of shrunk to the back a little bit, and if anything, people talk about the Lumia devices, or oh yes, that's the Windows Phone device, or maybe even a reference to Microsoft. So I think there will be plenty of noise in the media about it. I think plenty of traditional phone geeks will sort of grumble about it, but I'm not actually sure it's going to have that much of an impact, in the UK at least, in the way it's perceived by the average person on the street. But I'm not an expert in this. I don't have any data set to look at. I do know in some markets, I think it will be a bigger impact where the Nokia name is kind of better known, where Nokia didn't kind of disappear to nothing in smartphones because Symbian device is held around a bit longer. I mean, Italy in Europe's maybe an example of that. You could probably go to some of the Asian markets and see that. But I don't know. I mean, have you got a viewpoint on this? Have you got any anecdotes you can share with us, Steve?
I think I agree with you. Certainly in the UK, I don't think it'll make that much difference at all. The UK market is pretty high-end across the board. But in other markets, where, as you say, they've got Nokia-branded feature phones, the Asha range. You've got some old Symbian devices still hanging around. You've got the Nokia-branded Windows phones, which have been rolling out this year. They'll be rolling out over still throughout 2015 and still actively sold. And, of course, at the start of 2016, January the 1st, 2016, Nokia, the company, separate from Microsoft, can start using the Nokia name on a new range of smartphones made with the what then be the original Nokia name. So we could then end up having a complete continuum of confusion across all the different markets and all the different time frames. So it'll all come out in the wash, Rafe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the bigger question is assuming that Nokia got back into phones, and I don't necessarily mean Nokia directly themselves, they could well choose to license it to another company who could then produce kind of cheap Android devices and maybe put a bit of money behind the marketing. And I'm sure there's all sorts of things around comeback marketing. But, you know, given that Microsoft have a little bit longer to establish this brand, and Microsoft, can they tie in the colors and the Lumia name such that by the time that option for Nokia to come back in whatever form it would be, would there be enough significant kind of brand liquidity or asset left to make it worthwhile, or would it, you know, damage Windows Phone in some way? It's hard to see that being really significant apart from, as I say, maybe traditional phone owners. On the other hand, you think about the Nokia name, what it means to people now, and actually it's things like the countdown memo, I mean, the 3210 and the indestructible phone is still very much alive, and that's very heavily associated with the Nokia name, which really will now have no connection to the Lumia devices, although in effect they are the closest descendants because it is the same teams producing them, it's the same labs that they'll be testing them in. And kind of that same hard-won experience is really going into the Lumia devices. Now, I mean, you could be a bit cynical about this and say that a lot of people who did make those devices no longer work for Nokia, and certainly the whole round of redundancies and all of that means it's not really the same teams. But if you're going to be drawing a direct ancestry, actually, you know, Lumia phones are, you know, the direct descendants of the Nokia phones of old. But there is going to kind of be this cut because of this name and marketing change. I honestly, though, think it's probably not that significant when we think about the number of devices being shipped overall, so 10 million Windows Phone devices in the last quarter. I think for the majority of people, if they're aware of it at all, they'll know the story. And those who aren't aware of it will probably associate it more with the Lumia and the Microsoft and the Windows name as much as anything. But I'd love to hear some other opinions on this. I think it's very easy to be quite negative about this, but you kind of have to put up some data and say, you know, why it's going to be like that. And I sort of put my hand up and say, I haven't really got any data or insight to offer a particularly positive view, but I think you can be pretty sure that the various Microsoft marketing and sales teams around the world would have looked at this very carefully. And I suspect, given that they could have kept on using the name for a bit longer, they've been very deliberate in the way they've done this, and they've chosen to switch at one particular point. They have been quite deliberate in the way they've changed the marketing, and you're seeing all the changes on social media. I noticed Nokia Conversations is switching over to Lumia Conversations, and all the stuff associated with that, you know, all going in one big bang. It's just going to be a bit weird that you are going to continue to have Nokia branded devices being sold, you know, not least the 830, which is a real cracker of a device, I think. And even going back to some of the, you know, the 530, 535, and that there's only five numbers difference, but one's Microsoft and one's Nokia.
Yeah, of course, throughout 2015, if Microsoft don't produce another killer flagship camera phone Xenon Flash, I could still be using a Nokia branded device in my beloved 1020, which will carry on and on and on.
So anyway. I'm pretty sure we're going to see a flagship device with the launch of Windows 10, which is sort of the, I guess, spring, March, April time. Whether that's the 935, the 950, or something else. Whether we'll see a 1030, as Steve is hoping and I think praying for, it's fair to say. I honestly don't know, but it will be interesting to see whether that also has an impact. I think in some ways producing a Halo device, just as the 1020 was kind of iconic in all the marketing and that yellow color and that camera module on the back, it would really be helpful to do something similar again, but obviously have it associated with the Microsoft name and the Lumia name and kind of, you know, clear all that out, re-establish it. I guess that would be a marketing-led strategy, and perhaps you actually need to think about it a bit more broadly than that. But nonetheless, this is the first of, I have no doubt at all, many Microsoft-branded Lumia devices, and tis the end of an era, and so and the 530 is where the change happened.
I can tell you really are tearing up there, eh?
I am.
Before we finish, I'll read out half a dozen of the flow stories that I covered this week, and maybe you can just pick one of the six that you fancy making a comment about. Link, Microsoft Link, which is part of one of the extended office suite, is to be reworked as Skype for Business, rather unsurprisingly, as soon as Microsoft bought Skype, so the writing was kind of on the cards. Nokia Reading app is being withdrawn, and it was rather sadly, I was always rather fond of that, as an ebook reader and a way of reading PDF files in particular. Photomath, an application that's been touted around the Windows Phone blogosphere, but I found absolutely zero practical use, and it didn't do anything for me whatsoever. But do read my flow story for why. Picture X is a new cross-platform piece of software that lets people share photos from events with each other in a really rather nice way. But it is freemium. There is some cost involved, but it's all implemented rather cleverly, so do go and look at that. And finally, CBS News, which is obviously an American news organization, that has an official Windows Phone app with live TV and video highlights, and it's available all to anyone across the world without any of these nasty regional restrictions. So any of those you fancy commenting on, Rafe?
I was just going to have a little sniff about Nokia Reading as well, because this is one of the apps I installed. And while I didn't actually buy books through it, well, I bought a couple years back, I did use it kind of as a reader. There are some good alternatives available on the Windows Phone Store. If you're looking to buy books, you're probably going to be looking at Amazon Kindle or the Kobo Reader, but Frida's a really great third-party ebook reader as well, and there's a couple of others. So that's the one that I would probably pick out. The Link story is kind of interesting, but like you say, somewhat inevitable. And the Photomath, yeah, really clever use of technology, but unless you're looking to cheat in your maths homework, it's hard to get terribly excited about it. But I do want to just pick out one you didn't mention, which was all of Microsoft's MSN applications, that's things like news, weather, health, travel, have been updated, and you can now install onto the memory card. You've described them as being SD compatible, quite rightly, in the news story. I was never terribly appreciative of this particular ability, and still I was using a device with just 8 GB of internal storage, and therefore I put a micro SD card in it and was able to install apps onto it. And so having that, especially for these apps, which some of them, they get into the 10 or 20 megabyte size or more by the time they're installed and storing data, I actually really appreciate this, because it means I can keep more free on the internal disk. And there are still some apps that will only install on the internal memory, things like banking apps, presumably because they're worried about security without any particular reason to be so, or developers have just opted for performance reasons to be in that internal memory. But for those MSN apps, there was no reason. So a welcome update. And I don't know if you've got them installed, especially if you're on a low memory device, those with 4 GB of internal memory, for example, you might want to opt to uninstall those and then reinstall them, but on the memory card this time around, just to free up a bit of extra internal memory. So for things that won't go onto the internal memory, won't go onto an SD card, it's always good to have that. So just pick that out as a flow story of interest.
And having gone over a number of these stories and proved to Rafe that I'm worth the beer money, I think we should sign off for this week, Rafe, and say we'll hopefully catch you all next week. Goodbye from me.
Yes, and goodbye from me. We'll return next week to talk about some more things. I'm hoping by then I'll be able to share some thoughts on actually having tried out some of the new devices we've been talking about in the last few weeks. Also talk about having seen some of the new non-Lumia Windows Phone devices at an event recently. Share some thoughts on that and some news on when they might arrive in the UK market, at least. But that's all for the next podcast. And until then, it's a very goodbye for me, and thanks for listening.